Elizabeth and Philip Jennings, two kids, a split level in the Virginia suburbs. They run a travel agency and drive a big, boxy Oldsmobile, a typical American family in Ronald Reagan's America, except for their other job as Soviet spies. Last Wednesday night, when The Americans debuted on FX, an FBI agent moved in next door, which prompted Philip, played by Matthew Reese, to suggest to Kerry Russell's Elizabeth it might be a good time to defect.
I'm saying we might be blown. And I'm saying if they are watching us, we can't kill Timoshev. I'm also saying we are Philip and Elizabeth Jennings. We have been for a very long time. So why don't we get ahead of this, and why don't we make the first move and offer ourselves to them? We could get a lot of money. $3 million for Timoshev. $3 million for us. We just get relocated, take the good life, and be happy.
Are you joking? Is this a joke?
No.
And, of course, they don't defect, or we wouldn't have a series, a show where the central characters seek to subvert truth, justice, and the American way. Washington Post TV critic Hank Stuver noted that the deeply flawed leads are more and more popular on TV these days. A meth maker in Breaking Bad, a mob boss in Boardwalk Empire. So who's the bad guy you find yourself rooting for on TV? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation at our website as well. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And Hank Stuver joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks. Always glad to be here.
And in your piece about the Americans, you wonder if Elizabeth and Philip might spend some more time in front of their own TV there on the program so we could get a good idea just how much TV has changed since the 1980s.
Right. You know, the show is set in 1981. And if these KGB agents were... We presume that they are in every regard fully American. They would be sitting in front of Heart to Heart in Dallas, and where you used to know who was bad and who was good. I mean, you know, throughout the history of storytelling, every hero has a flaw. But the way you launch a television show now is to start off with somebody who is morally corrupt. And really the plot will always be about how much further can they go before it all comes crashing down.
And it's going to come crashing down any second, it seems like.
Right, right. A sense of doom is point A in a TV show now. Philip and Elizabeth on The Americans, it's really a feeling of how long will it be before their neighbor figures them out. Or the Soviet Union collapses. I don't know if they can hold out 8 years. They've got a pretty crafty neighbor who's an FBI agent, who is very much like, in fact, one of the editors at the paper said they should have called the show Breaking Vlad, because it's just, in a way, it's just like Breaking Bad, in which Walter White, the high school chemistry teacher turned meth kingpin, we've watched that show for 5 years now, waiting for his brother-in-law, who works for the DEA, to find him out.
Mm-hmm. And before that, we had The Shield and all kinds of complicated characters on The Wire. But that's cable is different from HBO, which is certainly they're all different from network TV.
True. But I think the broadcast networks have more and more launching shows in which even the person that you're supposed to pay attention to as the hero or the heroine comes with all sorts of complications now that makes you dislike them.
Yeah, a CIA agent in the old days, it was pretty uncomplicated. You were fighting those KGB officers.
Right.
These days, it's Homeland and a very intriguing character.
Right, and on Homeland, it's two characters who have a lot of problems, one of whom may very well be a terrorist, or we were led to believe, or could still be.
Mm-hmm. It's complicated.
And a CIA agent who's broken every possible rule, including divulging her mental health. People are bad now.
People are bad now. And why is it so popular, do you think?
It's been a long journey. If these people and the Americans were watching TV in 30 years ago, it would have been more clear cut. I think we're just so accustomed now to our heroes crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few extremely popular celebrities or political figures, presidents, who get out unscathed and whose deepest flaws are not revealed to us somehow. Sports, certainly, recently.
Mm-hmm.
All of our heroes fall now. And so I don't know. I think we derive And then there's a pleasure in the anxiety of watching someone fall apart.
Are you proposing a show about a painting called Feet of Clay?
Yeah. Right. That's better than Breaking Vlad.
No, it's not, but go ahead.
You know, they just... I mean, I watch shows like Breaking Bad and Homeland from a place of anxiety, almost where I almost wish I was prescribed some sort of medication for that part of Sunday night where I do have to go to bed. Because I think so many of us get so wrapped up in the horror of watching someone continue down a downward spiral. Even the truly fictional shows like The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. they're just predicated on an anxiety of which who is dead next? Soon they'll all be dead, you know. And nobody's good in that show either. Nobody is purely heroic in that show.
Well, all right. Who's the bad guy you find yourself rooting for on TV? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. The obvious one first, and a very good one too. Betsy in Sterling, Virginia. The TV bad guy I most love, Tony Soprano.
And this was the show that changed it all in so many ways, but certainly trained American TV watchers now to enjoy and prefer a show in which the good guy is the bad guy.
And he's also incredibly vulnerable. A mob boss who's going to the psychiatrist.
Yeah, yeah. A whole range of neuroses and problems.
Let's see. We go next to Courtney. And Courtney's on the line with us from Tucson.
Hi.
Hi, Courtney.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I just think of Nancy Botwin from Weeds, and that's on HBO.
Showtime.
But it's on Showtime. That's right. It's such a great show. She's a great heroine. She's a mother that blames, like, she sells weed and then blames that she's doing it for her children. Her husband just died, and she ends up running this whole Mexican, drug cartel, and it's crazy, and then she ends up almost getting shot in the head.
Yeah. I stuck with Weeds the whole way. I loved it. I thought it was almost Homerian
epic.
I
have to say, I kind of ran out of gas after
yeah.
a while.
You know, I had a friend who opposed the show. He loved The Sopranos. And I've been to many movies with him where people get shot point blank in the head. He has no problem with violence and abject awfulness in media content. But he couldn't watch that show because this is so sexist too. He just could not get behind the idea of a mother who deals drugs. It was just abhorrent to him. And it's funny, people do draw lines still. They're like, I can't watch a show in which somebody does X, Y, Z,
yeah.
But I can watch The Sopranos or Weeds. It's weird how people draw their lines.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Thanks very much for the call, Courtney. If people are going to be able to watch a show in which opens with a man strangling a dog.
Right. Right.
This is the new,
House of Cards.
Netflix. It could be interesting to see if they're going to watch it at all. But.
Well, or watch all 13 hours at once. This is the new show on Netflix, Netflix only. Starring Kevin Spacey. It's a remake of a British series, novels, and a series of miniseries, if that makes any sense. Kevin Spacey plays the House Majority Whip. And in the opening scene, he strangles a dog and then tells the camera, you know, how cruel and pointless life really is.
Let's go next to Colleen. Colleen with us from Grand Rapids.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
And that's exactly the one I was calling for, was House of Cards with Kevin Spacey.
How many have you seen?
We are pacing ourselves. I believe we're on either episode 7 or 8. But our
That's pretty
boys,
good.
Who are all in high school, are just every single night, can we watch it?
Oh, wow.
So we all love Kevin Spacey in mm-hmm. general, but just he plays such a great evil guy.
Can I ask you, is there anyone on the show who are you rooting for him as an evil guy? Is there anybody on the show that strikes you as a good guy?
Everyone on the show has an agenda,
right.
I think, and they play it so well. I'm almost starting to think we're at the episode where there's a homeless guy outside of Kevin Spacey's wife's office. I'm almost starting to think he'll be the ultimate good guy.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't see a clear-cut good guy anywhere.
Yeah.
Because everyone has an agenda.
Yeah. But. It's very dark.
Yes.
And that's the point. But good for you. You're 8 episodes in. You know, this is a whole new territory for people like me now. When are we allowed to discuss certain plot points in these things?
When you could have seen all 13 of them on Friday.
Right, right.
Right. Right.
That's more Miss Manners department if she ever wants to.
And I haven't even started it yet, but I did know there are no good guys, so you haven't given anything away, Colleen.
Well, I could, because I was worried. I hesitated when I started saying that. I'm like, uh-oh, for the people who haven't seen it yet.
Oh, well.
But, no, it's great.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email. This from Mark in Ellensburg, Washington, Bad Guys I Love on TV. Bryan Cranston as Walter White on Breaking Bad. We'd mentioned that earlier. Andrew from Hallandale Beach in Florida. The bad guy I loved was a girl, Donna Mills, as Abby on Knott's Landing was bad because she couldn't help herself. She loved money to the point of neurosis, wonderfully played by Ms. Mills and her barrels of eye makeup.
Yeah, I remember her. Yeah. but she was consistent. You know, they brought her on as a baddie, and she stayed a baddie.
Stayed a baddie, didn't flip. And
yeah, but, you know, soap operas, you know, have certainly traveled that territory where someone goes from good, back to bad, you know, over 10, 15, 20 years.
We're talking with Hank Stuver, the TV critic of the Washington Post, about bad guys who seem to be getting all the good parts, as usual, on TV. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we'll go to Beth. Beth with us from Stillwater in Oklahoma, of course.
Oh, OSU, great.
Yeah, that's actually where I go to school. I just wanted to bring up Gregory House in, of course, the TV show House. I think that show was kind of a catalyst for that sort of antagonistic protagonist, you know, the one whose character is pretty much his own worst enemy. And he falls towards, you know, drug abuse and loses all of his friends. And even towards the end of the season, goes into a mental asylum. And as much as you want to root for him, he's still shooting up every show.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. He was a great one. Nurse Jackie, another. All of the doctors now, you know, the hospitals are rife with anti-heroes. They can't stay away from the drugs. They can't stay away from each other. They cut corners in surgery. There's a new show on TNT now that's all about all the mistakes the doctors make. It's called Monday Mornings, and it's about the weekly morbidity meeting that they have.
Reading your review is all the mistakes the writers make. But.
Yeah. Right. It's not terribly good. It's terribly terrible. But
where did I read? And thanks very much for the call, Beth. It was an interesting piece recently. It could have been yours. I forget, honestly. But it was that Gregory House was essentially Sherlock Holmes MD, that he was one of those characters. So this was, I think, in the New York Times last Sunday that it was about the re-release of The 7% Solution.
Right.
And this was the Holmesian character brought to life, Basil Rathbone, finally put to rest, apparently in the grave where they found Richard III. And this is all the Sherlocks who have followed, including Greg House.
Yeah, right. Well, no such thing as a new idea. And, you know, in the recent iterations of Sherlock, I mean, the emphasis is on what a jerk he is. And, you know, sort of in a modern way, so we sort of place him on some sort of social disorder spectrum, you know, where he can't relate to people. He's so smart that he can't relate to people.
Well, that's certainly the approach of the CBS show.
Yeah, yeah. And the very popular British Sherlock.
The British Sherlock's a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. In the meantime, let's go to Judy. Judy with us from Grover, Colorado.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Ian McShane's character in Deadwood, Al Swearengen.
Boy,
Deadwood, yeah.
Deadwood was human depravity from beginning to end. I mean, just the moral rot was in every frame. A lot of bad guys. Bad good guys.
I'm sure things have changed a great deal. I was in Deadwood a few years ago. My favorite sign outside of the storefront was Fudge and Slots. Judy, thanks very much for the phone call. Let's see, we go next to this is... Steven with us from Austin in Texas.
Hi, yes. I wanted to talk about actually basically any of the vampires on True Blood.
Sure.
And I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Oh, I want to say, but I also wanted to say I think vampires are probably our first anti-hero because they've been around for very long and we've always been obsessed with them. And even though they're evil or whatnot, it just, I think, has some kind of humanistic ability to it that shines on our own knowledge in our own area.
Well, they've always been tragic characters. Well, most recently, you know, Anne Rice really gave the sort of heartbreak of being a vampire a whole new dimension that people have been riffing on for 40 years now. The True Blood vampires, you know, they to me, that is more like a soap opera than anything else, because the vampire who was originally good is now... the demon beast. He's like literally, well, I better not say because who knows who's watched the last season of True Blood all the way through. But the vampire who was so bad became heroic, and that was Eric, the Norse vampire.
Can't say I've been, I don't know.
That one is, I call it True Blood improv. It really feels like they're making it up. It's very yes and. Every scene, it just feels like they're kind of making it up as they go along.
Thanks, Stephen.
All right, thanks.
A tweet from Tom Schneider, bad guy in series to root for, Frank Gallagher in Shameless. And that's pretty bad.
Shameless is very popular in my household. The American version, the Gallagher family, each of them scraping by, breaking, sinning. Criminality is the only way to get by in their household. That show, just every week, never ceases to amaze me at the depths to which some of the people in the show will go to because of a situation they find themselves in. And yet we do root for them. That is a very classic example. There are a couple more. You know, we haven't discussed women who are bad. Girls, which is very popular right now on HBO, Lena Dunham's show. In the very first episode, her parents are staying in New York City, and she goes to their hotel room, and they have left the hotel room, and they left an envelope with a $20 bill for her, and they left an envelope with a $20 bill for the maid, and she takes both $20 bills. Ooh. And I've never forgiven her. I'm halfway through the second season now. I'm a little bit ahead of where viewers are. And I'm still mad at her about that.
Hank Stuber reviews television and holds grudges for the Washington Post. He joined us here in Studio 3A. You can find a link to his piece about the Americans. Its second episode is tonight on FX at our website. Go to npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, the president's pick for CIA chief sits before the Senate Intelligence Committee. We'll hear of some of John Brennan's testimony and some questions from some skeptical senators. Join us for that. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.